Welcome back to an Illinois High School Football Podcast. I'm Northwest Herald Sports Editor John Stife. I'm here with Northwest Herald Sports Reporter Joe Stevenson, Steve Susi, who apparently hasn't slept all weekend and has been doing projections for the playoffs, and Kyle Neighbors from Kankakee. I hesitated a minute there. this week, I want to mix it up a little bit and just kind of start out with some initial overall thoughts that people have. Because I have the mic right now, I'm going to throw mine out first. First of all, Lyons Township was really impressed. They beat Glenbard West. Sterling was really impressed about their win over Geneseo. Steve, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you just mentioned two things that that kind of stood out to me for the weekend, especially the Lions' victory over Glenbard West. I know they Glenbard West has a few issues, but they always seem to figure out how to win in that stacked conference that they play in. And this time they couldn't get it done, so it kind of makes you wonder if maybe you have to reshuffle the deck in the Western Suburban, because there are some really good teams in there. And I mean, it's conceivable with Lions taking down Glenbard West, there's a couple of other teams that are probably chomping at the bit to try to get at them too. So, that's definitely kind of a shaky one, one that really kind of surprised me out of the results this week. There were quite a few, but that one definitely stood at the top of the list.
And Ben Bryant, their quarterback, who's excellent. I just read the story from Suburban Life on that, and he dislocated two of his fingers during the game. He came back and he threw two more touchdown passes after that, and the win kind of made the difference in it. So that was another interesting note I just saw. Kyle, what are your thoughts?
Who's Kyle?
Are we going over to me now here?
Yes.
That Lions win was really impressive, but 7A kind of was a bloodbath this week, and you look through it, you know, you can't really count that loss against Fenwick, but Mount Carmel getting upset by St. Rita was really interesting. I have no idea about that Batavia St. Charles East game. I mean, I knew the St. Charles schools were up this year, but to see them put on a hurting like they did to Batavia is kind of surprising. And then, you know, Libertyville goes down again, and here you go, Bradley coming back against Bolingbrook, and 7A, I don't even know where to begin with that class at this point.
For the record, Batavia, I'm pretty sure, was up 7-0 with like 6 minutes left in that game. I was following along. It was just East made some plays at the very end in the score.
Wait. 7-0 with 6 minutes left?
It was right around that. And then what was the final score?
The AP has it listed at 28-7.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. Batavia, it was in the fourth quarter, and Batavia was up 7-0. Those were all in the fourth quarter. I thought Batavia was going to win, and I was actually heckling the guy that sits next to me, Tom Clagg, who went to St. Charles back when it was just the Fighting Saints, before they did that split, obviously, and that thing turned around quick, and you know, impressive win for East, of course, but you know, Batavia was right in that and doing well most of that game. So Joe, overall thoughts, playoff related. From your area.
Well, from our area, we were just talking about how 5A last week, you didn't know who to pick, and we thought Woodstock North was a deserving team. And from our area, Woodstock North gets ranked sixth last week. I'm not sure. It might have been the first time the Thunder's ever been ranked. And what happens? It goes out and loses to Richmond Burton. So it just kind of further drives home that point about 5A just kind of being – Who do you pick there this year?
For sure, I had difficulty again trying to rank the teams in 5A and trying to figure out who was there and who was good, because after you get past the first couple, then it's like not certain who's good. Steve, those projections that I was speaking of, you sent out a copy of those recently. What are some kind of notes on that and kind of where the splits are at between the classes?
Well, when I looked at this week, I think the things that really stood out to me was, I mean, there are always interesting teams that are hovering around the bubble, but this week right on the bubble were some really notable teams in several classes. Fenwick slid down to sixth as the largest school in that class, and that surprised me. That threw me for a little bit of a loop. And then when you go to the other end of 6A, you find Lamont as the smallest school in 6A. So From top to bottom, that class turned out a little bit differently than I expected. With like I mentioned, with Fenwick sliding in there, and then another school that I was kind of counting on being in 7A, or at least expecting them to be, Lincoln Way West, also slid down into 6A. So that field looks a lot differently than what I would have anticipated 4 or 5 weeks ago. There's a lot of schools in the large area right now that, if you would have went before the season and said, is this a playoff team, you would have said probably not based on past history. And that's what's causing this. I mean, if you look at the list of the projected teams in 8 and 7, there are teams that aren't usually there, and that's kind of affecting where the lines are in 6 and 5. So that's interesting. And then going a little bit farther down once again, and I think this is going to be a theory, a trend to look at all year long, where does Phillips fall? This week they fell as the smallest school in 4A, which means one minor adjustment, anything that could happen, they could slide down into 3, and obviously that causes a cascade effect in both 4 and 3.
Interesting. And when I look at the 8A, there still are just a ton of 5-0 teams. I'm looking at the list here. There are 14 undefeated teams in the 8A, according to the IHSA projections. Oswego East, of course, is going to be 7A, according to what you put together based on more enrollment and who's making it figures. But still, that seems like a high number, especially compared to the other classes. Why is that?
Well, I mean, some of it has to do with the fact that, I mean, it's just the caliber of teams that fall down there. But I think you'll find, I mean, this week there'll be a couple more of those paired off of there. Once we get down to brass tacks, I don't think there's going to be an exorbitant amount of teams that are undefeated in 8A. I think the final number will end up being somewhere around 6 or 7, which is a little high, but it's not crazy high. So that's, I mean, to find the place where I think it's going to be kind of crazy, you got to go all the way down to 3A, which I think there's a path to having as many as 12 teams undefeated in that class at the end of the season. I'm not even talking about now. So that's the one where it looks like you could have some 9-0 teams seated at like 6 or 7 in those north-south brackets, which is just, that seems crazy to me.
And one of those matchups that we will talk about for this week is Oswego against Oswego East. We'll talk with Kristen Sharp a minute about that game. Kristen, before we talk about the big game this week, Oswego East, Plainfield North, it was a 7-point game last week. Was that as close as it sounds?
You know, I think Oswego East was in control most of the time. I think Plainfield North, you know, tried to strike a few different times, but, you know, just from looking at the way the game broke down, it really could have been a little bit more spread out, but they had couple of big fourth down stops inside the goal, inside the 20, and two interceptions and a fumble also stalled some drives too. So it could have gotten out of hand. Plainfield North managed to stay in this one.
All right, now this week, both undefeated teams, both teams that could run the table after this. Actually, interestingly enough, Steve Susi does projections of these. He has Oswego East projected now as the biggest team in 7A in the playoffs. That obviously could change, but this will be important either way for whether it's 8A or 7A playoffs. What are your thoughts heading into this week?
You know, honestly, the two of these teams have such a great rivalry, and historically, this has never happened before, where you've got two 5-0 teams in the same town battling for, you know, not only bragging rights, but a conference championship, which Oswego East has also never seen. So, you know, playoffs aside, this is a huge game, you know, regardless of, you know, 7A, 8A, and how that all kind of shakes out. I think the main goal for these teams is to get the win over their rivals rather than how it's going to set them up in the playoff picture.
And it seems like the strengths of each of these teams, Oswego, of course, being the defense and the offense on the other side of town, match up against each other. And do you think that's where it's determined? And how do you think that matchup works against each other?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot because, you know, they defense, you know, can win games, obviously. And Oswego's defense is very good. I have been covering them for a long time, and this is one of the better defenses that I have seen from them. And, you know, but I just don't know, you know, how that translates. Oswego East defense, you know, they are very good. They practice against their offense all the time. So I think that has made them better, you know, as a whole. So I think they both have some very talented defensive players, and it'll be interesting to see which defense is going to hold.
Do you think that Oswego can score points against East? You know, they of course started the year, they weren't scoring a ton of points. They were obviously winning the games. Do you see this as being high scoring?
I don't. I think we're going to see, you know, very similar to what Oswego just came off of with Plainfield North. You know, some, you know, they're able to score in the 20s. They've showed that the last couple of weeks. So if they can put up those numbers, I also think their defense is capable of putting up a score as well. So if they can get 2-3 touchdowns, you know, they can stay in this game with Oswego East. The key is going to be holding Oswego East into the 20s, which, you know, hasn't really happened this season as well. So I think that's really going to be the key. You know, if Oswego, you know, is able to hold East into the 20s, they have a chance. But it's really going to come down to Oswego really is going to need, I think, a defensive score if they're going to want a chance to win this one.
Now, I know the names Ivory, Kelly Martin, and Jalen Banks. Who else should I know heading into this game?
You know, they've got some interesting receivers. Stephon Harris is a big, tall guy. You know, he is a big basketball star. He is good for, you know, some real, you know, highlight reel catches, as well as Kiana Caldwell. He has really made a name for himself this season as well. He's kind of stepped up in replace of a receiver that was all-conference who graduated last year in Mitchell Glendy. So he's taken on a good role as well. So he's got two good receivers, two good targets. They also have, you know, just some talented guys on the defensive side that can make some pickoffs and things. It seems like, you know, defensively, they have just a good sound team. There isn't really that, you know, that standout linebacker, that one name that's really carrying them. They really seem to be a nice cohesive unit this year.
And Plano has gotten back to winning. I believe they have the two losses now against undefeated teams, Johnsburg and Hersher, but they seem to be rolling, and I see the name Izzy Adiodi.
Izzy, I think it's Izzy Adiodi, but yes, it is a mouthful.
So that you feel like they're in a good spot now moving forward towards the playoffs?
I really do. You know, that was a, you know, very big win for them on the road. They had not won since 2007 down there, and that win over Mantino, I think, says a lot. They are very explosive, and when they decide to score, they do. They had, 40-some points against Sandwich in one quarter. They had 33 points just in the third quarter alone against a team like Mantino is pretty big. So, you know, they are sitting pretty well right now. They have an emotional game on Friday night. It's homecoming, which coaches love and hate, and they're playing Coal City. Coal City started 3-0. But they have lost again to two very good teams in the same two, in Mantino and Hersher. So that will be a big one for Plano to kind of get over that hump. And then they do have, you know, three very winnable games to close out the season. So they're sitting much better right now after last Friday.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for your time, Kristen.
Thank you.
Here with Chris Casey, who was at the Batavia and St. Charles East game on Friday night. Chris, later on in the podcast, because we taped the other part before this, I tell people that Batavia was up 7-0 with 6 minutes left, and then St. Charles East scored 28. Am I wrong?
No, it was. It's kind of hard to believe, and you really might have had to be there to actually, you know, believe it, but. Yeah, with 6 minutes left, St. Charles East was down 7-0 and had a fourth down at the just inside the 10-yard line and went for it and tied it up on a pass, which for them is kind of interesting. You wouldn't think they would score their first touchdown on a pass coming from a triple option team, but on a fourth down they kind of had to pass and yeah, in the blink of an eye that kind of opened the floodgates. They scored that touchdown, had an interception a couple plays later, and the very next play after the interception was a long touchdown run, and Batavia was kind of never the same after that. It kind of just unraveled for them, and yeah, St. Charles East won 28-7 and ended the long 34-game conference win streak for Batavia.
But this, I mean, you look at that end result and it's like, okay, East dominated this game. That's not what happened, right?
No, I wouldn't say East dominated, but they kind of did what they did against St. Charles North the week before. They kind of weathered a storm. Batavia scored with 2 minutes to go in the first half, so it was a 0-0 game for most of the first half. Really good defensive battle. And right after East scored that touchdown in the first half with 2 minutes to go, East fumbled like their next play on their own 20-yard line, and Batavia could have took an advantage and went up 14-0 before halftime, but actually their next play, they threw an interception, so they kind of gave East the chance and, like I said, kind of weathered that storm. And, you know, East did what East has done all year and kind of hung around and then, you know, struck when opportunities presented itself.
So is the thought now that East got through those past 2 weeks and they're going to be able to run the table now?
You'd think so. If they're able to beat the likes of, you know, three straight weeks, they beat Geneva, St. Charles North, and now Batavia, three of the, you know, best teams in that on that side of the conference. And they play Bartlett next week, a crossover game in the conference, and then they have the Elgin, Larkin, and Streamwood next. So you could potentially, at the end of the season, see a 9-0 St. Charles East team.
How about Larkin's win?
Again, one of those that you couldn't believe until you actually confirmed it. But I mean, from what I was told, Geneva had, you know, a 24-0 lead, and from what I was told, maybe took the starters out at the beginning of the fourth quarter, and Larkin scored a couple times quick, and they tried to put him back in, and Larkin was able to complete a comeback.
So that's what's Geneva's record sitting at then?
Geneva has one win now. So they are 1-4.
Yeah, that's you know, obviously back against the wall when you're in that situation. Have they already played St. Charles North?
They have not. So they are going to have to beat St. Charles North and Batavia to avoid a fifth loss. And they play Batavia next week. So Batavia's kind of angry after losing the East and get to host their big rival Geneva at home next week. So that's the game I'll be at. And it's going to be a tough road for Geneva to come away with 5 wins this year.
But in theory, we could, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, week 9 is the game between North and Batavia, right?
Correct.
So we could be talking about two teams that are 7-1 heading into that game.
Correct. Yes, and I actually think that'll be the case. And you know, for we talked about kind of an upside for North after losing that game to East. I mean, if North can run the table there and be 7-1 playing Batavia and find a way to beat Batavia, I mean they could be just as dangerous as any team in the area heading into the playoffs.
And I think we're talking about 2 7A teams there, whereas East will probably be undefeated in 8A, and then they'll get obviously a home game in a little. It's a tough bracket, but they'll get a little better first round at least. They'll be favored. They'll have a chance to win a game before they get somebody really tough.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because I was talking to a couple of the assistant coaches after the game, just kind of waiting for the coach to finish talking to the team, and said even if you are 9-0, you could get an extremely difficult 5-4 team that plays in a really tough conference. So it's not certainly no cakewalk in 8A.
Yeah, there's I think I counted 14 undefeated teams at this point, and that'll obviously change, you know, as these teams start playing each other in conference. But there could be, you know, 6 or 7 undefeated teams by the end of the year in 8A, and East will probably be one of them.
Right.
And then in 7A, when you're talking about those other two teams, they could both get home games even at 1-2 losses, but that also could be. Maybe it won't go that way. Maybe the 2-loss team ends up going on the road, so they're playing to get a home playoff game in week 9.
Absolutely.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot for your time again. Really appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Take care.
And, Steve, what are your thoughts on that Oswego East Oswego game?
Well, I mean, history says that that's Oswego's conference until said otherwise. But if you look at comparative results right now, and that's what I spend a lot of time doing, I mean, I'm leaning towards Oswego East in that one. An impressive offense, and if they continue to crank out the productivity that they have thus far this season, that would be the way I would lean.
And they were challenged for, it looked like, pretty much the first time this year, 21-14. They won this past week. When you're looking at the top, Loyola's still undefeated. Brother Rice still undefeated. Brother Rice has an interesting game this week, though, against Mount Carmel. A Mount Carmel team, like Kyle mentioned, lost to St. Rita. Thoughts there?
Yeah, it's that game is really interesting to me because, I mean, I have a hard time thinking that maybe I've overranked Mount Carmel a little bit, but that loss to St. Rita gave me a little pause. Now, I know that St. Rita, I mean, if you look at their schedule, they were essentially playing for a playoff berth in that game in Mount Carmel. They were going to have to upset somebody over the course of the rest of their season to get themselves into the mix because of the just ridiculous stacked nature of the Catholic League Blue teams. But, you know, that game should be really, really good. It wouldn't surprise me if either one of those two teams win. It is a true toss-up in my mind.
Palatine beat previously undefeated Hoffman Estates. Three of those silver teams remain undefeated in Lions, OPRF, and Hinsdale Central. Glenbard West, surprisingly, was the first one to drop out of the undefeated. But do you see this kind of scenario when they play each other, like everybody's going to beat each other once and there won't be like one team that emerges as the best team?
Well, that's the thing about the West Suburban. When you look at what they've done in the past, usually you have four, sometimes even five teams that are capable of beating the supposed number one team in the conference. So it's all from week to week, you're always going to get a result there that maybe based on record surprises you a little bit. But I mean, it's almost ridiculous, the division between those two conferences. The West Suburban Silver has all of those good teams. And then the West Suburban Gold has so few teams that are anywhere near that caliber. So I think sometimes I look at that and I go, boy, I'm surprised especially the schools that usually find themselves in the middle or the bottom aren't begging for some realignment there, because my goodness, it would be tough to be an average football team in the West Suburban Silver right now, because there's just no mercy there with the four teams on top right now.
And Niqua went to Indianapolis, picked up a win, but a couple teams we haven't discussed probably at all. Naperville North still undefeated. They've beat, you know, they have a Mateo win on there, Lake Park, Wheaton North, Glenbard North. You know, they get Niqua this week, and then West Aurora, which is undefeated, and then gets Huntley this week. Huntley's 3-2, but lost to two of the better teams in 6A out of Cary Grove and Prairie Ridge.
Yeah, when you look at West Aurora, they're one of those teams that I was talking about. Teams that, like, before the season, you look at the potential teams that you think are going to line up in the upper classes, and you wouldn't logically include West Aurora, but they have played very well so far. The one thing about them to take note of is that their schedule is not strong. Their opponents have accumulated very few wins to this point, so it's one of those things that you have to look at in regards to whether or not they can step up and really meet the challenge that's in front of them this week. Because, I mean, I'm skeptical about them, but they certainly have at least done what they can do to this point.
And, Joe, Huntley's a team that has two losses. You know, I'm not nearly as scientific as Steve or as great at breaking these things down, but I assume that with two losses they were going to be a road team in the playoffs. And but they're obviously going to have to win this one this week, and then week nine they get McHenry. So those will be the two biggest challenge, we think, left on their schedule.
I would agree, yeah. They kind of had a rough night the other night against Cary Grove, but I know Huntley has West Aurora has Huntley's attention. They know that they have some really good athletes on that team, and they're capable, and they will not be looking past them. I know that, but I would expect Huntley to finish 7-2, and like you guys were talking about, with so many teams still unbeaten, 7-2 in 8A when you're seeding the whole state, they probably will be on the road, but could be a tough a tough seed to get in the first round as like a like, you know, 17-22 in there.
This is where Huntley's schedule really helps them when it comes right down to it. Playing a team like West Aurora that has a bunch of wins, regardless of quality at this point, and then their own conference schedule with teams that have done well in the non-con, this is where, like, when you look at it on playoff night, I would be surprised if Huntley finishes 7-2. I would be surprised if they're not the highest seeded 7-2 team in the 8A draw. So that's why I think a home game is possible. It just kind of factors on how many teams fall down into that two loss category. But Huntley will be very high amongst, if they finish that way, amongst 7-2 seeded teams in 8A, simply because of the schedule that they play.
And absolutely, the FEC teams, all of them have won through 5 weeks in the non-conference matchup against, what is that conference they're
playing? It's the Upstate 8.
Against the Upstate 8, yeah.
I forget which division, but yeah, it's the Upstate 8.
And the way we're looking at it, that we think that's going to continue because Cary Grove has South Elgin, Huntley has West Aurora, Crystal Lake, South has
West Chicago.
And then I don't know what the other one is. There's one other one in there. When we're going to 7A, the big matchup this week is East St. Louis and Edwardsville. We figure East St. Louis is the favorite, right, Steve?
Yeah, I would lean that way, but I mean, I've seen that Edwardsville program in action. I'm sure they're not going to go down without a real hearty fight there, because this is a good Edwardsville team, and right now they're an interesting watch in regards to what happens with them, because they're pretty close to that 7A, 8A line. So if some funny things were to happen with some of the underseeds in 8A where they would fall out, Edwardsville looks like a candidate that could move up to 8A. So I'm sure they want to position themselves as best they can, and beating East St. Louis would help them out a lot in regards to seed, because, I mean, I've got them in the 8-10 variety right now in 7A with a loss, but obviously they'd rocket up whatever bracket they're in if they were able to get a win.
And Oswego East, this is where, you know, this week's game is obviously really important for seeding for them, because it looks like you have a few teams projected as undefeated, them being one of them in this class. So to kind of, I guess, probably not to get a home game, but to be one of those top seeds, they got to win this week.
Yeah, I think there's a possibility that you know, 7A could end up with as few as two teams that are undefeated in the conference or in the division. So, I mean, getting this win for them would be huge, and then finishing it out and going 9-0, because, I mean, I think if they're 9-0, there's no way they're seeded lower than 5. And if they're able to finish that out, they could climb as high as 2 or 3 based on what happens with a couple of other big games.
And also a big factor in this, I think, Bennett's 7A, right, Steve?
Yeah.
And they've got one loss. And as we get further in the season, the ESCC, at least right now to me, it seems to start making more sense in that Marist is really good. I believe they're the team that beat Bennett with one loss. Then you've got, like, Niles, Notre Dame. You know, after that, maybe St. Patrick, Naz. It's, I guess we'll find out a lot more over the next couple of weeks where Vider, Carmel, and Marion Central figure in. And Marion Catholic's been beat by a lot of them. So it, at least now it's starting to make a lot more sense to me as far as where those standings are, and that, okay, these teams are beating the other ones. But Marist continues to be impressive to me.
The math still continues to spin my head around a little bit in the East Suburban. I think there's probably 7 or 8 playoff caliber teams in that conference, but it just simply doesn't work to get that many teams in. I mean, there are too many games against too many good teams to make that happen. So a couple of quality teams are probably going to find themselves on the outside looking in with 4-5 records. But it's definitely a league where from week to week, you can have maybe who everyone thinks is the first the best team in the conference playing the fourth or fifth best team in the conference, and that's a tooth and nail football game.
Joe, that's why when Marion Central comes into the conference season with 2 non-conference victories already, and now they're looking at 4 games left, they have to win 2 of them. They've got Vider, Carmel, St. Patrick and Niles Notre Dame, I believe. So you got to win 2 of those. It seems doable for them, right?
Yeah, it does, because I don't think they needed to worry in that conference. I don't think you need to worry about scheduling tough non-conference opponents to get you wins as much. You're probably going to have enough wins to get a good seed. You just need 2 more wins. So, and they got those easily those first two games.
Kyle, Bradley Bourbonnais seems like it's moving up in 7A after Friday night. They ended up beating, it looked like they beat Bolingbrook 22-21. What are your thoughts on them?
Yeah, Steve was actually over there and covered the game. And from the sounds of it, it was kind of a pair of fluky touchdowns, but you know, they got the breaks. They're a team in their conference now, 5-0. They're going to be favored here in every game outside of the Lincoln Way East game. And with the amount of points that they have and the way you're seeing this past week, you saw a bunch of the undefeateds go down, to where if they get to 8-1 with the amount of playoff points, they're going to be in really good shape and a pretty high seed, it looks like. Like I said, outside of that Lincoln Way East game, they're going to be rolling here pretty well.
Steve, any other 7A thoughts?
Well, you know, when I look at 7A, I look at that bracket that I showed you guys today. Is that there are some freaky games that like could possibly pair up in the first game. I look at what I had, like Libertyville projected to play Bennett. I had Maine South projected to play Lake Zurich. It's some of these matchups and the way that they're potentially aligning are fascinating for first round games. They're the kind of games that you would expect to see much later in the draw.
Joe, when we get to 6A, Prairie Ridge, Cary Grove both held served. We expect them to continue to through the rest of the season.
Yeah, pretty impressive win for Cary Grove against a good Huntley team. It was 33-7. I picked Cary Grove to win. I thought that was going to be a lot closer game than that. And it might have been one pivotal play was Huntley was driving with a chance to take the lead. And Cary Grove scoops up the fumble and runs it all the way back and then really kind of control things in the second half. Cary Grove looking really good right now. Again, a strong defense, and they got the fullback, their best player, Tyler Pennington, back. He had a big night, carried the ball a lot in the second half of that game. So, you know, as I look at the north half, if Cary stays 6A, and I think that's what Steve has thought all along, I see Cary possibly as the biggest hurdle for Prairie Ridge in the northern half trying to get to the state championship. And do you agree, Steve?
Yeah, I think there's the thing about 6A that stood out to me today when I looked at it is, and I think for the record, I would be amazed if Cary Grove was not a 6A playoff football team at this point. Based on where they are on my sheet, it would have to take a catastrophic move to get them in. One that I guess is out there, which is dangling out there, which we haven't touched upon yet, which could change everything. I don't know how much you want to discuss this, but a potential looming strike in the Chicago Public League could make all of this conversation moot. So, I mean, the IHSA hasn't even decided what they're going to do if they do end up walking out. Which makes this whole exercise difficult to figure out. But based on where we're at right now and assuming that the Chicago Public League resolves those issues, Cary Grove is definitely a 6A team. And when I look at the 6A bracket that I've drawn right now, I think whoever survives that north bracket deserves a tip of the cap and will probably be heavily favored against whoever comes. I mean, I think they should be heavily favored over whoever comes out of the south, even Sacred Heart.
I think that's a heck of an assumption, though. I know that you have to make it in the projections, but
oh, it is. It is, and I'm aware that it is, but I can't do it any other way right now. I mean, I could technically take out the 14 teams that I have qualifying as Chicago Public League teams right now, but I don't know if that's how the state's going to handle it. So, I mean, I had someone tell me this morning that knows more about what they might decide than I do, that they may go with putting them in the bracket and awarding forfeits to the teams that draw them. It's not ideal, and I don't think that's the way that they should do it if that's the way that it comes down to. But not knowing the exact resolution to how they figure all that out is definitely something that needs to be monitored because, I mean, there are 14 teams in there, and it's not like I can just take four teams out of 7A and slide everyone down. They are sprinkled across the entire field. There are public league teams in 2A, 3A, 4A, 5A. I mean, they are across the board. So, I mean, this week I had 12 teams not qualifying as 5 and 4 teams. Simple math tells me hey, you just put all those teams in, and it opens the door for a really high 4- and 5-point team to maybe get in as an at-large. But it's definitely a slippery slope, and it's something that we haven't really had to deal with before. We've had one or two teams that like were maybe affected by this type of thing, and including East St. Louis last year, but we've never seen a quadrant as large as this that could potentially not be in. So it's definitely something that, yeah, I don't want to make it sound like I'm dismissing it as a possibility, because I know it's a very real possibility, but it's definitely something that needs to be kept an eye on over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and that date was, what, the second week of October that I thought I saw as far as the start date?
I believe the earliest they could go out is October 11th.
Okay.
So, I mean, and then you still can't make any concrete decisions, because what if it's resolved 3 days later? So, I mean, it's one of those things where I think if they do walk, that I don't think we're going to have a concrete resolution until a couple of days before the playoff pairings are announced. Because as long as they have a window to get back on the field, you can't leave them out. So, and there are some teams in the public league that have already won 5 games and have already not necessarily cinched, but this week there will be some public league teams that have cinched a playoff berth with 6 victories. And by all rule, even if they have to forfeit games because of a teacher strike, they've still qualified. So it's going to be a real slippery slope if there is a teacher strike here.
And we went through all that fine print last year when McHenry was on strike and ended up losing 2 games out of it about, like, what day you have to be ready and all that. So I also see it as understandable if they're putting those teams in the bracket, like you're saying, that already have enough wins, because if the brackets come out on Sunday, the strike ends during that week, they still have time to prepare and play a game. So it's like, what point are you kicking people out because they're on strike?
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, you have to have X amount of practice days before you can play and all this other stuff. But you're right. I mean, there would be a situation where, I mean, a strike gets resolved on the weekend of the playoff pairing announcement, and those teams would have enough time to get practiced and prepared for a potential Saturday playoff game in the opening round the following week. So it's going to be a decision that I believe that the IHSA is going to provide some clarity for in the near future as to what their plan would be if this happened. But as of right now, we don't know. So it's a very speculative discussion. I haven't gone through it. I probably will tonight. I probably will take a look at it and just see how much different it looks if you remove those teams and see what the major changes are. Just because I'm interested, just to see, and even though we're early in the process, it might provide a little bit of clarity as to how much the classes jump, and there will be some movement. So it's definitely it's not going to be a good situation if they strike, just from a understanding what's going to happen over the next couple of weeks. The public league teams don't usually succeed all that much in the playoffs, so they're kind of considered an afterthought to begin with. But you'd hate to see a bracket loaded with, you know, a couple of teams getting a huge advantage by getting a forfeit in the first round, while others that may have better records and better and more deserving of not having to play that first round game have to play a game and maybe even lose it. So, I mean, it could be really yucky if this gets extended.
Back to 6A, though, that looks like a strong bracket on both sides. Looking at it, it looks like you projected on the north 3 teams to go undefeated in Prairie Ridge, Boylan, and Rolling Meadows, and then I want to say 2 on the bottom in Sacred Heart, Griffin, and Lamont. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, you're reading it correctly. That's the way it looks right now. I mean, it's one of those things where the geography says what it needs to be said, but I mean, Lamont being so close to being not in the class anymore could change that landscape too if they slide down to 5. So it's definitely interesting how many teams there are that are sitting here, you know, whether or not they can get to undefeated records and stuff like that. So I don't know if I necessarily say that the brackets are imbalanced, but I look at the north bracket and I feel like that's a deeper bracket, to be totally honest with you.
Now, here's a technical question as far as when we're talking about you projecting these. I'm looking at some of the seeds here and trying to figure out exactly what in my head what you picked here, because Antioch right now is in the 5A bracket. They're undefeated. You have them as a 3. Then Lakes and Grays Lake North are both in 6A. And when I'm looking at Antioch, I'm looking at Lakes and Grays Lake North as both teams that could potentially beat them. And I think they're going to beat them, even though Antioch's undefeated right now, because Lakes played 2 non-conference games at the beginning and got beat, came in. I want to say they were 0-2 or they were 1-2. And it looks like they could win out because they look like a strong team. How do you figure out what you're going to project in games like that?
Well, I mean, I tend to go with, if I believe 51% likely a team's going to win a game, that's the way I go with it. So, I mean, there's always games. There are 50 games this week, for example, that I projected that I'm not, I look at it and I'm like, I'm not sure. But, I mean, ultimately the only way that this works is you've just simply got to make a call. So, I mean, they lose those games, then the projection changes, and that's why this projection 3 weeks from now I might look at it and laugh. But I mean, all those little machinations from here to there affect everyone else, and you can see that Antioch loses one of those games, they drop down. The team that beats them picks up a significant stance because they've moved up to a different level in win totals. So one game can affect two different draws in a major way, especially after just 5 weeks of games. So that's how you have to look at it, where at any time there's a minor upset or someone throws that off, it's going to throw off the whole bracket. It just has to.
And we've kind of got a little bit of a situation like that up here too, as far as when we're sitting here trying to project. It's like every week in the FEC, it's like we've got 3 teams that we think are in. McHenry probably would be the 4th team that's in, but then it's like, is Jacobs or is Hampshire going to make it? And that's going to impact other teams, because Hampshire being a 6A and Jacobs being 7A there, it's like, I see that you projected Jacobs, but it could just as well be Hampshire that ends up winning between those two and would make it. But it's probably between those two.
Yeah, it really is. And like you said, it's one or the other. And if you can go all the way through the boards and find games where there's a 6A playing a 7A or a 2A playing a 3A, where it's kind of a toss-up game and you pick the wrong one, that's a team that needs to find its way into that field. There's another team that's taken the place of the vacancy that was left behind by the team that lost. And you can see how every week there could be 2 or 3 changes to the field in each class, and that's usually about where it goes. Sometimes it reaches 4 or 5, but 2 or 3 teams that move in, 2 or 3 teams that move out, and depending on where the bubble line is, that could be a 9-win team that moves into another class. It could be a 5-win team that moves into another class. So you have that the whole thing could just kind of revolves, and it could revolve around something simple as an innocuous game that nobody's even talking about.
And it looks like after the result that Joe was talking about earlier with Woodstock North losing, it looks like Richmond Burton's going to be in 4A too. Whereas going into the week, we weren't so sure that they would get the number of wins they need, because they've got a reasonably tough schedule ahead. And I want to say they have Genoa Kingston still as
Genoa,
well.
Genoa Kingston,
right?
and 3-2 Woodstock, and they still have to play Marengo too.
They do, yeah. So
that's a team, for example, that, like, if you would have asked me to do this a week ago, and I don't do it this early, I probably wouldn't have had them in the field. And then this week, I've got them at a 6. So, I mean, that's I totally reversed my position on them, basically because of the result of one football game.
Yeah, and looking at it, you know, I can't imagine they would win out at this point with those teams they have to play. You have to think that Genoa is a good enough team that might beat them, but they're playing a lot better than they did week one, losing to Wakanda, and in just the way that Johnsburg dismantled them. But I guess this is that part of football where it's all about matchups, and it doesn't, I guess, go in a straight line like you would think, kind of like that St. Rita result we were talking about earlier. That didn't make sense if you're looking at comparative results going in, but, you know, it was something that happened.
Yeah, and you'll find a bunch of those, and you'll find them as we get farther down in the season too, where you'll see a team that knows that their playoff life is on the line, and they'll rise up and beat a team that has maybe two, three more wins than they do just because of the significance to them. And, I mean, you can't predict those things, but they always pop up. I mean, for example, last year there were 10 teams that were playing teams with better records than them in week 9, and those 10 of those teams won games to fight their way into the field. And that's just kind of the way. You can't really, I mean, comparative results help, but they don't always tell the full story.
De La Salle, thoughts on them? They're you know, they played St. Francis team that's obviously way down this past week, but they're sitting there at 5-0, and I believe they have a big matchup this week. Actually, in the coming weeks, they have their final four are Montini, Mount Carmel, Marmion, and Fenwick. Marmion got its first loss, I believe, to Montini this last week, and that's four good teams, so they could reasonably finish 5-4, but I would think they would do better than that. I think they're going to win one or two of those.
Yeah, I think they're in decent shape, but that's one of those things where their schedule was front-loaded pretty good for them, and that's nothing wrong with that. I mean, they're going to play some good teams on the back half of their schedule, like you just mentioned, but I mean, it's going to be super hard for them to run the table, and I certainly don't think that's going to happen. But I think 6-3, 7-2 is a reasonable estimation for them, and they'll be battle tested when they get there. So they're an interesting team that I don't know a ton about at this point, but the next couple of weeks will tell us a lot more about them.
What I know is they have a lot of Division I players, but I haven't seen them play an actual football game. So those are two different things, obviously. In St. Lawrence, you guys have been touting them. Kyle, I know you saw them in touting them. They're a team that it looks like you're projecting them to have one loss for the year, and that seems about right. Is that your thought on it?
Yeah, that's my take. I mean, I think that they're a very good football team, and then they're in a situation where they already won their big crossover against St. Rita. And I don't see a real huge – I mean, there are obviously some decent football teams left on their schedule, but I don't see a huge hurdle for them getting to 8-1.
When we go to 4A, then, it seems to be a completely different situation from 6A, where it's like, okay, here's all these good teams. In 5A, I don't know beyond Sterling, Peoria. It looks like Peoria, Notre Dame is a pretty good team. I don't know who else is really good in there. Do you have any thoughts? Who else are you putting in that bracket?
Yeah, I think you might be speaking the truth there about 5A. I don't see a lot of depth there. I mean, by seed, I mean, and I know nothing about this team, so I'm talking a little bit out of turn here. By seed and by productivity thus far, Highland might be a decent team, but I don't really know anything about them. To be honest with you, I mean, you had expressed concerns about Antioch picking up some losses. I mean, and then you get into the rest of that north bracket. You've got a couple of public league schools. I mean, Solorio's got a really nice quarterback, but beyond that, I don't see them being a serious threat to, like, make a deep run. And unlike previous years in 5A, where I look at the left side of the bracket with the lower seeds, I don't really see anybody who jumps out at me and says, okay, we can make a run as a 12. They may make a run just by accident, but, I mean, there's not a team that's just jumping off the paper at me saying, okay, this is the kind of team that I think can make a deep run despite their seed and the fact that they have a couple of losses.
And maybe I'm just sitting here and looking at past year's result, but Nazareth says that to me. Long as they're not number 16 playing against Sterling, because I would guess they would lose to Sterling from what the results I've seen from Sterling, but I don't know that there's any other team out there in that bracket that I wouldn't pick them against.
I'll be honest, I've got Nazareth in the field right now more because of their past pedigree than anything else. If you gave me a blind taste test on Nazareth and what they've done this season and this season alone, they're probably not in my field, but I just have this gut instinct that they're going to figure out a way to get themselves to 5-4 and get themselves in. Obviously, that's not going to be very fortuitous for them if they do manage to do that and this bracket holds. But that's really the almost the only reason why I have them in my field right now. I think there's a reasonably good chance that they don't get to that level and find themselves on the outside looking in.
Absolutely, and if you're looking at this bracket, I could name a number of schools on here that I'd rather have Joliet Catholic than, but they're 0-5. They're out. Marion right. Central beat them this week, and that's the way the system should work. But you know, sometimes you have a situation like that where, like you're talking about, Naz, maybe they don't get to 5, but you know, they're better than some of the teams in this bracket. But I guess you could. Everybody says that about the NCAA tournament every year too. Like you could take just Power 5 schools and not any of the small schools too. But that's not what it's about.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things when I look at 5A, and 5A's kind of been a problem class for me since they put in the multiplier. I felt like for the last couple of years it's been Naz and everybody else, and now with Naz struggling a little bit, it's kind of open season, which isn't a bad thing. In any way, shape, or form. That's not what I'm saying. And, I mean, I haven't seen them, but this Peoria team interests me. I'm going to admit, they really do. And I'm sure they're a pretty good football team. So, moving forward, it's not a bad thing to have a class that, you know, that you really don't know what's going to happen. And I think definitely right now, 5A is that class.
This is odd, but I was looking at it earlier in Waterloo. I kind of like their results. And I forget what the one game they lost. It may have been Highland, like you were talking about. Is that right? Do you have any idea who that one loss was? I think it was.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm drawing a blank on that myself, to be honest.
Waterloo's actually 3-2. They lost to Columbia as well.
Okay, oh, yeah. And Columbia was a team that I really liked when I was going through and saw those results. Like, oh, this team's pretty good.
Yeah, Columbia usually gets the job done. They're in an interesting situation because they've got 3-5-0 teams in their conference right now, and they've got I think it's back to back games with these 2-5-0 teams coming up. So that should be interesting for them. But they are a dangerous team. When we get down to them in regards to the South bracket and 4A, I don't think to the point where they could beat Altoff, but I do think they can give them a game.
And then speaking of 4A, I'm looking at number 3 in the top half, Good STEM Academy. I thought they were a good stirring last week, but what do you – I mean, they won 18-16 on Thursday, and you said they could be an undefeated team in that bracket, it looks like.
Well, look at what's going on in their division. Their division is a train wreck, and my dog has opinions about Good STEM too.
My pitch this week on Johnsburg, as far as strength of schedule, is that
it's bad. I mean, but look at their conference, and they've already beat the only other team in their league that has more than one victory. And the rest of the teams on their schedule have either one win or no wins. So, I mean, I don't know how you do it, and I'm sure it wasn't intentional, but they've put together one of the worst schedules I've ever seen. So, I mean, it's impressive, but I mean, and I suppose they could lose to maybe one of these teams to knock them down to 8-1, which would be good from a bracket fairness type of situation. But, I mean, right now they've only outscored their opponents 59-50 for the entire season. I mean, how do you even do that? I mean, how are you 5-0 and have outscored opponents 59-50?
Because you win 18-16 like they did last week.
they are the complete enigma. If you look through the entire state right now, no one has played a schedule where their opponents have a fewer number of victories than they do. So it's one of the terrible inequities of the system. All wins count the same because, I mean, the fact that this could potentially be a 3 seed in the northern bracket of 4A, which when you look at that bracket is a loaded bracket. It's I'm not going to go so far to call it a travesty, but it ain't good. I'll say that much.
Some 14 seed is going to be awful happy if that works out, Steve, because then you go on the road and win that first game, then you get a second game at home.
Yeah, and that's one of the things when you look at how the public league schools have done in the past, it's definitely something to be mindful of. I mean, it's just funny, and I mean, I look at that bracket, and there are right now I have four Chicago public league teams making up the top half of that North bracket, and I mean, there'll be a lot of teams out there that they won't admit to it, but they're crossing their fingers that they draw one of those four, because it helps you whatever way you want to go about it, because I don't think, other than Phillips, obviously, those other teams will not be competitive teams. That they just won't be. So, I mean, you're catching a break there, and a big one. And then the other thing that I have a problem, I mean, it's the way the numbers fall, and I can't really argue with the numbers, is that three of those four, and they're not the good, and Phillips is on the top of that, but they're all in that bottom half there. So, I mean, if this stays the same, the teams that catch themselves in the bottom half of that North bracket are probably going to be smiling on playoff pairings night.
Absolutely. And with Johnsburg, as you look at the results, I thought maybe Plano would be their best win, but I'm looking at wins right now, and Richmond Burton looks like a really good win, especially the way they did it. And Rochelle, that's Rochelle's only loss at this point, is Johnsburg going out there and winning, Joe.
Yeah, and that helps Johnsburg's situation in regards to, we were talking about schedules before, because despite the fact that Plano had struggled in the middle pocket of the schedule, they did very nicely last week in a win over a pretty decent Manteno team, and the back end of their schedule is not nearly as arduous as the front half of theirs was. So they're going to pile up wins and potential playoff points for Johnsburg as well. So it's a good situation for them. They want to keep themselves right in that position if they can. The only other undefeated teams potentially that I have gridded for the 4A North both have terrible playoff point situations. I mean, there is no way that either Aurora Central Catholic or Goodstem are going to get anywhere near the points that Johnsburg has. So if they were to stumble once, they'd still have a very high seed simply because of the fact that the remaining 9-0s don't really have a lot of points at their situation.
Yeah, you had mentioned it last week that now with Geneseo losing to Sterling, it kind of opens the door for Johnsburg to be that top seed in the North, right?
Yeah, and it really clearly does, because if you look at the teams on the other side, and you never know exactly where Geneseo is going to fall, North or South. It looks fairly clear that, at least with this construction of teams, that they're going to be in the South. But now with one loss, they couldn't surpass Johnsburg anyway. So, I mean, it stacks pretty clean. The wild card in this scenario, and I'm still not totally sold on them, and I really wish they played Byron in the regular season so I could get some clarity on them, is Genoa Kingston. So, I mean, they are a team that could potentially run the table and throw a little bit of a monkey wrench into that, but it's not – I mean, I don't know if I see them being able to do that. So, they're a team to watch in regards to Johnsburg protecting that number one seed.
And that's a Richmond Burton game, right, Joe?
Richmond Burton does have Genoa Kingston, yes.
So that should be one of the more interesting games remaining on the schedule. As well as this week, Johnsburg has Woodstock North, You can't just disregard them because of the comparative results, but it would be easy to say, okay, they beat Richmond Burton 53-0. Richmond Burton just beat Woodstock North. Woodstock North doesn't have a chance. We know better than that, though, right, Joe?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, we do.
All right, and getting to, I guess we went through 4A there. What's 3A look like, Steve?
Well, 3A was interesting to me primarily because, like I said, we were watching those bubbles pretty extensively. And then Phillips ended up in 4 this week is an interesting thing. And when you look at 3A, there's just so many potential undefeated teams in this bracket that, I mean, we could have as many as 10 or 11. And they're evenly distributed across both brackets. I mean, I still think IC Catholic is the overwhelming favorite here in 3A. But, I mean, you've got so many good teams in there. You've got potential second-round games with teams like Hersher and Byron, both that I think are probably going to finish the season undefeated. And you've even got some teams on the outside of that bracket, you know, seated 10 or below, that I think are super dangerous, like Bloomington Central Catholic. you know, to a lesser extent, in you know, Williamsville on the south side, Tolono Unity. These are teams that you're used to hearing much higher in the brackets, and they're I mean, they've picked up a loss or two, and due to the fact that there are so many 9-0s, they tumble down quite a bit with a loss or two in the seedings.
And Kyle, do you think Hersher is going to end up an undefeated team in there?
Yeah, I think, despite the fact that they decided to turn the ball over in the red zone multiple times against Cole City this week, it's a really good defense, and their offense is usually a lot better keeping taking care of the football. So I think they're going to be up there 9-0. We're going to have Wilmington from our area also at 9-0, a team that I think you know, that's going to fall in that southern bracket that I heard really good things about. And just picked up another good win against St. Joseph Ogden is Monticello. I don't think we should sleep on them. I kind of did at the beginning of the year, thinking that they had just lost, you know, a Division I quarterback, that they were going to take a major step back. But they've been pounding teams. And according to a couple people that I talked to last week, they're for real. So that should be interesting to see if they come out of the South bracket.
And Steve, what do you know about 2A and 1A now after looking through it a little bit more?
Well, I mean, 2A is still... It's kind of interesting to me based on the fact that there were some teams that, like, I had projected to be 3A teams that have slid down into 2 and really gave some depth to that bracket. Pena and Westville are two of those teams, and there's a lot of undefeated sitting in this bracket. I still think this is Tri-Valley's class, but I certainly think there's a long list of teams in here that can give them a run. I'm interested in it from a lot of perspectives. There's a lot of new faces in the 2A bracket, and some of them are really intriguing stories. I'm still fascinated by Westchester St. Joseph's kind of, I guess, emergence as a team capable of doing anything on the football field. They are usually a team that I have eliminated from my thoughts after week 5 because they've already piled up 5 losses, but at 4-1 at this point and playing a caliber of competition that most 2A teams don't, even though I have them down there at a 12 seed, I think they're the kind of team that could be really interesting to watch.
Steve, how are they 2A?
Yeah,
I thought they were a much bigger school than that. I thought they'd be like a 4 or 5A for football. How did they get to 2A?
Yeah, I think it's an enrollment thing. I think it's what you're finding in a lot of those schools of that nature, that you kind of think in your head that they're a lot bigger than they actually are. And due to the fact that they have not had any success, they don't get multiplied.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was so wondering if it was that.
The
yeah,
combination so of those two things, that's the reason why in basketball they're a 3A team, which in the 4-class system would indicate they're a much larger school, but they are not multiplied in football because – They've never been in the playoffs, let alone win a playoff game, which is what you need to have that multiplier applied to you. So provided that they win a playoff game this year, they would rocket right back up to where you would think that they would be, 4 or 5A, somewhere in that neighborhood. But due to the fact that this is a school that has had absolutely no football success whatsoever, they're not multiplied.
I was thinking that might have been it. So they get the waiver then.
Yes, they get the multiplier waiver for football. You can find a few other examples about that throughout the field, but that's the one that is most notable to me. That's the reason why they're where they're at. Because if they had the multiplier applied, they're a 4, maybe they're definitely they'd be a 4.
All right, let's close off with a game to watch. Kyle, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I'm actually going up to see Bradley Bourbonnais at Lincoln Way Central. Lincoln Way Central's 4-1, and I think it's kind of a soft 4-1. But the thing that actually interests me about it is with Lincoln Way North closing last year, Lincoln Way Central absorbed, I think, more than half that student body. It was a large percentage. And we were talking to someone earlier in the year about them having a huge varsity roster. And considering that they're taking a lot of that talent from Lincoln Way North, who was what? Were they a 5 or 6A semifinalist last year?
It was 5.
Five, yeah. You know, so obviously there's got to be some more talent there. And I, as much as I want to see Bradley Bourbonnais up close, I'm actually interested just to see what's going on with Lincoln Way Central.
Joe,
I'm going to go with Johnsburg and Woodstock North. I think Johnsburg is going to win out. I don't think Johnsburg's going to be that challenged, but I think Woodstock North is capable of challenging Johnsburg a little bit and bouncing back from that loss to Richmond Burton. The toughest games left for Johnsburg are this one and Marengo, but I am interested in that one.
Steve?
Yeah, there are quite a few this week. We've mentioned a few of them. I'm really interested in seeing what happens with Edwardsville and East St. Louis and figuring out kind of the battle of a couple of towns. You've got Naperville North and Neuqua. You've got the Oswego game that you mentioned. I mean, there are quite a few of them around this week. I don't think it's quite as big a moving day as week five was, but there are definitely some games out there that could upset the apple cart, if you understand what I'm saying.
Absolutely. And the game I like is Brother Rice, Mount Carmel. Just I want to see how good Brother Rice is in that scenario and if Mount Carmel can avoid, you know, picking up what would be a third loss. So thanks a lot, guys, for your time, and we'll be back next week.